This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. They have beautiful book page posters that have passages from some of our favorite fantasy series like The Lord of the Rings and A Song of Ice and Fire and Harry Potter. They even have the Night's Watch vows with the Three-Eyed Crow. They also have Targaryen, Stark, and Baratheon bookmarks. You should really go check them out. It's 4Cats Boutique on Etsy and get yourself some bookmarks and amazing artwork. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. 4Cats Boutique on Etsy.
Welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. And friends, we are back with an exclusive Raven for you today. See, that's the thing, Matt, when you comment, when you send in the Ravens at btkcast@gmail.com, they get featured on the show and we talk about them. It's our favorite thing to do.
Yes, it is. Yeah, you can send those to us, as Ez said, at btkcast@gmail.com. You can hit up our podcast website, which is Bend the Knee podcast.com, or you can just leave us an long extended sort of YouTube comment. So we actually have a couple of these. We're going to see how they go. These are probably going to get split up into two episodes because they're longer ones, and Ez and I tend to be a little long-winded. But yeah, if you guys go out of your way to send us a really big Raven, we're going to do our best to sort of turn it into its own episode, which then will also be featured on YouTube, because we cut out clips, by the way, and so sometimes you can check it out on YouTube or you can check it out on the podcast. So but here's one actually from a new Patreon member, and that is Naya Thrice the Wanderer, right? So by ways of Ashai by the Shadow, whose house words are, for it is known as the roots are deep, what you sow, you shall also reap. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. So here we go. So, greetings, sirs. A kindly wanderer would like to know if you have touched on this subject before. The Night's Watch vows as an ancient spell. It's as old as the wall. I feel like this vow is like a prayer or mayhaps a blessed or protective spell that is part of what keeps the wall standing. I feel as it is a military order, the wording has probably remained the same for over 8,000 years plus, you know, since it's been around, and with that wording, a purpose. So let's break it down. Night gathers, and now my watch begins. The army of the deep arises and approaches. I am now on the clock. It shall not end until my death. I shall take no wife, hold no lands, father no children. I shall wear no crowns and win no glory. So fight to live with all my innate authenticity, since nothing else matters. It demands all my attention and energy. It is for the realm, or maybe instead reverence to the nameless ones. It's sort of a thankless job. I shall live and die at my post. I am the sword in the darkness. Live by the sword, die by the sword. I'll fight blind if I have to. I am the watcher on the walls, which is reverence to the crows of the old gods and the north. I think crows are regional and revered by the north. Also a nickname for men of the Night's Watch, mystical insights. Crow meaning and symbolism include adaptability, cleverness and intelligence, teamwork and reciprocity, transformation and perhaps psychic abilities. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn. Life/hot servants as opposed to dead/cold servants of the army of darkness. Could be referencing Lightbringer or the Sword of the Morning, perhaps both. Barrack's flaming sword, right? You know, think sort of that type of idea. The horn that wakes the sleepers. The horn of winter, should it not be imbued somewhere among the wall? And accessible when needed. Mayhaps the maesters know. I believe if the horn blows, it will awaken leagues of spelled sleeping heroes and giants. Also believe that there are sleeping giants within the wall imbued with a dragon glass or frozen fire that was blessed to be a shield. as opposed to cursed dragon glass, as the White Walkers were created to be a sword by the magic of the children of the forest. Anyways, if it's in the vows, then should it not provide extra assistance? The original main castle was the Night Fort, maybe? So maybe the horn is somewhere around there. So moving on, the shield that guards the realms of men. Reverence to the giants of old who may have honorably sacrificed themselves to stand guard within the wall as part of the spell of the wall. This could explain why people don't see many giants anymore. And the persons of the Dawn Age were wise enough to know that if the Night King has an army of dead giants, it's, you know, freaking over. It's game over. So if the Children of the Forest spelled them with a long sleep, they are dormant, but still perhaps could be activated. And then she provides some additional mystical info. There are 19 strongholds along the wall. The 19th major arcana in tarot is the sun, which is a symbol of light and life simply. Even though the wall is made of ice, it's really a spelled sun shield or a hot shield that the cold servants cannot get past. Mayhaps this is why it glistens at times. Then moving on, I pledge my life to the Night's Watch for this night and all the nights to come, which is just sort of through thick and thin, we're going to stick together. She says, I still haven't figured out why. There must always be a Stark in Winterfell, but I feel like it has something to do with Bran the Builder's role in the construction of the wall. So what say you, good sirs? And then she sort of goes on to there's a lot more stuff here. So it's kind of really a two-parter here. But we'll just talk about this part first.
Well, wow. You know, something to add on to this, I think, and I'll triple check. Matt, you can triple check me on this as I talk about it. The Night Fort, if you would. I believe the Night Fort is also the place where, I could be wrong, but you remember when Sam is coming back through the wall and he has to speak the Night's Watch vow to get through the Weirwood Gate? There's like a gate. Bran is coming down.
The Black Gate.
Yeah. I think that's where they're at. So I thought that was interesting that was the connection and, you know, to that fort. And why do those doors open when you say the words? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Power in those words. There's power in those words spoken from a true brother, to where in which they would open a gate. That seems like it seems like if you're going to call it a spell, like right there's your almost like proof. When you say it, it does things. It's something that you can use to gain access to somewhere else. It's a wall, Matt, and to get through it, there are gates, and they speak the words and they get through, right?
Yes. Yeah. That kind of reminds me of is Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
The gate, right? You know, at Moria. Oh, yeah. But yes, you know, speak it is interesting. It is definitely interesting that this gate exists because it's there's not really that many sort of magical barriers. I mean, I know the wall is sort of one. There's not really that sort of many magical barriers that exist, or at least that we see, that we specifically sort of see. And it's just like we come across this entrance, right? This magical entrance. Like, why have nobody in the Night's Watch has ever even talked about it?
Yeah, again, some of this stuff it feels so ancient that it's just been forgotten. Like the whole idea, as was mentioned in The Raven, that a Stark must always be in Winterfell. Why? There's a lot of different ideas around that. There's ideas on why was the wall constructed? What is it guarding against? Why do they say this vow? All those things, it seems like they've gotten lost over the years. You've had generation after generation of members, brothers, guarding, but nothing's happened. And over time, it just becomes a joke. That's what we see in King's Landing, is that it's turned into an absolute joke. We're not going to send anybody there. We're only going to send criminals there. Sorry, Matt, but it's like it turned into the Australia of the United Kingdom. Okay? We're going to send prisoners there. You know? And that's it. But, I mean, not that Australia is a joke. I actually love Australia. But I just think it's interesting that over time, that's what George likes to do, is say these are legends, there's lore. The story of Azor Ahai might be quite different. The Last Hero, maybe they're all in one the same. Lightbringer, Dawn, all of those things. Are they the same or are they different? Is the sword Dawn actually Lightbringer? It's gotten lost over 10,000 years. How are you supposed to keep track of all that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the Nightforge itself, just to kind of to remind people here, some of the things that are said about it. It's supposed to be twice as big as Castle Black. It's supposed to be this massive, massive place, right? You know, the abandoned Nightforge has broken towers and a maze of tunnels connecting its vaults and tunnels. Buildings include a bell tower, a rookery, a brewery, a library, a dungeon capable of holding 500 prisoners, a bathhouse, an armory, a forge. The rat-filled Great Hall has only one wall remaining. The kitchen is a stone octagon with a domed roof and contains a stepped wall. You know, they said it has been rebuilt many times over the thousands of years, with only the deep stone vault remaining from its actual first form. So this is just sort of another thing, is that over time magic just slowly dissipates and disappears, and now Sam has to use it, and magic, my friend, is returning.
Yeah. Okay, this is how you go from one rabbit hole to the next. So you brought up the Night Fort, and I was just reading there some of the battles that took place. The Warg King in the histories, mm-hmm. is a skin changer who is there in the north of the wall after the Long Night. His given name is unknown, but the Kings of Winter of House Stark rose up against him, right? They fight him, and they kill his sons as beasts. They kill his green seers, and they took his daughters as prizes. That's some of the stuff that's this ancient kind of lore that could have been over 100 years. That could have been one contained battle, but they're killing green seers and they took their daughters, you know, took the Warg King's daughters. I mean, stuff like that is just, that's why, you know, I mean, look how much has happened in just our short little time, or our short story of the Targaryen history, the 300 years. Here of Aegon's, you know, conquest. We're talking 10,000 years ago, 8 to 10,000 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. You know, let me think about some of the other things that happened here. And then I'll tie it back into sort of that theory here. But just sort of, I think it is interesting just sort of look at a lot of this, because it does tie into it. Ultimately, what we're talking about here is basically the idea is the Night's Watch vow sort of a magical spell? And does its power slowly dissipate over time because you're dwindling and dwindling members of the Night's Watch, which I would say is definitely a possibility. It could also be just sort of a coming of age, right? That, mm-hmm. you know, the Common is coming. It seems like magic is returning for a bunch of reasons. It could also include just the way time has evolved. Like this could be a catalyst of a ton of events, right? Whether it's predestined or whatever, but I perhaps that is the case, because it does seem more and more like things are definitely changing. Now, looking back at the histories, remember, you know, of the wall, we know that Alysanne. Mm-hmm. Alysanne, her dragon did not want to fly over the wall. Didn't want to do it.
Right.
Yeah. And the Night's Watch then, you're talking like 150 years ago, is certainly stronger than it is now, but it's still not as obvious, still not as strong as it probably was thousands of years ago.
Yeah, which is interesting, because is it just some understanding the barrier, and what is it keeping out? What is it keeping in? What's the separation? Was it just a desire to not want to go there because of an evil force that was beyond that wall? Or was it some of the wards or the ancient spell work that's in the wall that kept the dragon from going across? Same thing that you have at Storm's End, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is an interesting connection that, there's spells in the wall itself. And these men say that vow all the time, right?
Yeah.
Whether they're pledging themselves or they just as a reminder, as we saw in our last chapter with Corin and John, you know, Corin says to John, say the words again. Say them with me.
Well, I remember they go pray, right? When they sort of say their Night's Watch vows, they say them in front of, right? They choose to say them in front of a heart tree. Right.
Yes.
In front of a weirwood tree.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's interesting too.
Are you giving your, and now, and here at the Night Fort, there is basically a weirwood tree that hold, it literally yeah. is what holds
Matt. It holds actually, the gate.
It is the is, gate.
This is something that I think we forget about from time to time. The gate actually will ask you a question. It says, who are you? The freaking gate spoke.
Yes, actually, I know.
It's like, what? I mean, so, and then you have to answer, I am the watcher on the walls. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers. I am the shield that guards the realms of men. The door will open, then saying, then pass. That's what it says. It says two things. It probably says three things, Matt. Who are you? You say the whole thing and it says, then pass. Or you say, it says, who are you? You don't give the correct answer, and it says, you shall not pass, right?
Essentially,
freaking,
yes.
It's a freaking Gandalf thing. Crazy. That's all it says. That's wild.
Yeah. So just going off of what she's saying ultimately, and I do like almost that there is that the purpose of each line, essentially, you know, it is an oath, and there is stuff to it, because when it's brought up, you know, we've talked before, and many have theorized, like, you know, some of the things like, I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn. You know, there's theories that the Night's Watch themselves are perhaps a light bringer, right? Like they are sort of the physical sword that's supposed to, you know, the not physical sword. They wouldn't be the physical sword. They would be the embodiment of a sword that would challenge to push back the.
Yeah. That metaphorical
the White Walkers, of, right? Yeah,
I think I've always thought that was really cool. And again, people when they describe the wall, and it's like it looks like a blade laid down. That's like got that. It's when the sun hits it. I like the cool thing to the tarot cards and the sun.
Yeah.
Hitting that being like a blinding light. I think sometimes they talk about it, you know, being a blinding light and it being weeping and stuff. You know, swords sometimes. Is weeping with blood, you know, running down the blade, and it very well could be like that. Yeah.
So, okay. Well, she goes on to ask here, cause we had talked about like, you know, talking about like, what do we think it is that sort of triggers the Night King, or perhaps just magic coming back. Now, we haven't seen the Night King in the books, but I do believe that there will, again, I've continued to say, I do believe there will be some sort of leader of the White Walkers. And I actually even sort of think that with the way they go in the show with like, okay, you kill one of the White Walkers and it'll kill a bunch of the whites that they command. I think that that's pretty logical. And I could see George going down that route. Cause ultimately we're going to have to kill them in some fashion. Mm-hmm. Right. Unless ultimately we do end and then just the others take over and then that's just it, which is possible. But I don't think so. I do ultimately, regardless of who it is, you know, whether it's Bran or Tyrion or Daenerys or Jon or any of them, I think ultimately that's we're going to end up right with somebody taking out the others and sitting the throne or doing whatever. I actually think the idea of sort of like that, like hive mentality, right? Kill the queen essentially and they all just die, or you know, you go down that route. So anyway, so she's saying here that it's the comet, right? You know, it's usually a comet is usually composed of ice, dust and frozen glass, right? You know, some appear every so often, like Halley's Comet comes around every 75 years. They have highly elliptical orbits. Some appear regularly, visible every so often. I already said that. And some have such large orbits that they visit the inner solar system once every hundreds of thousands of years, right? So in astrology, you know, comets are sometimes seen as bad omens. From the Roman Empire onwards, comets became the symbol of another kind of disaster, a human-related one. Death, riots, wars, and slaughter, the death of a king or noble being the one that caught most attention. When Julius Caesar was assassinated in Rome in 44 BC, his successor, Augustus, and then Octavian, who goes on to become Caesar Augustus, right, announced that Caesar's soul had already been ridden by the comet heavenward from ancient times to the medieval. Comets were seen as a symbol of evil power, which brought forth natural disasters, human-related disorders and slaughters, and history deepens people's fear towards comets' infamy. In 682 AD, when Halley's Comet passed by, there was a three-month rainstorm and an outbreak of the Black Death. And provides us a reference, which is pretty cool. So, the source she provides is the above source says the color makes a difference towards its effective nature. And in the show, the comet is depicted as a red tail, red referencing Mars. Mars references the Roman god of war, outward activity, aggression, anger, assertion, volatility, and great courage.
Yeah, I actually like the article, and we can post a link to this later. But like, just some cool stuff in there about what people in our own times thought about comets, and you even mentioned the Black Death, and also you had in 1066 AD, we had, let's see, Harold II, the King of England, fought William I, the Duke of Normandy, and died at the Battle of there, which. After which William succeeded to the English throne, Halley's Comet kept on bringing forth its implication regarding the death of an emperor in this way. So again, just the idea that it really comes down to like when it's happening, like you see the comet coming and then you look around your world and you say, okay, what happened? What major death? What thing took place that we can blame or make a connection between the comet? I kind of think George in this story does that as well. A lot of people see the comet as saying that it's there. Like for Daenerys, right? If you're pushing her arc and saying this is her sign, a sign that it's her time now. And then some would say, well, no, this is the triggering of the Night King. This is going to bring him back. Others that it's Azor Ahai again. It's Stannis is there doing his thing. I mean, with Melisandre. So what's it mean? Is it dragons? Is it, you know, is the comet sort of what, you know, propels magic into the world, or are we just associating it and saying there's a correlation between them and saying, all right, magic happens to be coming back here little by little, and there's a comet, must be the comet that's causing it, you know?
Exactly. Because remember, everyone begins to look at the comet and think that it has something to do with them, right? Everybody's seeing it, and they're thinking, Joffrey's thinking, oh, it's because I'm king, and Daenerys right. thinks, oh, it's because of the dragons, and you know, Stannis and Melisandre view it. Oh, he's Azor Ahai and Lightbringer and
fire in the sky, baby.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I mean, it's cool.
It could be both, though.
It could be.
Yeah. It could be that one. It actually does legitimately signify this is truth for somebody, but then everybody sort of views it and interprets it as their own heralding. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. George is not an all or nothing person. It's like, oh, some of these right. will be wrong and maybe one or two will be right. Or like you can right. see when him you, almost yeah. on stage answering that question. Like, well, some of them will die and some will live.
Right. Yeah. If you specifically go looking for a sign, then you are potentially more likely to find one.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So in our characters, again, it's from their point of view, as Matt often brings up. And so it's, they're thinking about themselves and they're thinking about their own arc and their own story and where they need to go and what is their guiding force, what influences them. And yeah, they're looking right now towards signs and things. Unless you're like Tyrion, I mean, you have other characters who are critical of that kind of stuff, which is cool. And those characters sometimes tend to be George's, not favorites, but he does like them and enjoys having those characters who cast doubt on what the other characters and their points of view are thinking, right? So yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Cool. Well, hey, yeah, thank you so much, Naya, for that that Raven. That's super great. Anyway, we will absolutely make a podcast, or ends up being sort of a YouTube episode, whatever, for this. If you send us a Raven, we love to do that. Love to give you guys detailed episodes on that, because you guys put a lot of work into your Ravens, and we will do our best to put work into breaking them down into episodes here. So with that, guys, I want to say thank you. We have some more Ravens and stuff coming, as well as the end of A Clash of Kings, and then we'll start diving into some House of the Dragon content. As so we'll just close here and say, as always, guys, remember that winter is coming.